Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with our friends at Guinness. I'm Barry Murphy. This is my partner in crime, the Bonnie to my Clyde, the Wren to my Stimpy, the Paddy to my Selma, the...
I think. It's one more.
The Sonny to my Cher.
The Corey to your Topanga.
Oh, wow.
The Kermode to your Mayo.
I don't even know who that is.
The Kermode and Mayo, the movie review podcast.
Not a clue. No, you lost me. I keep thinking,
it's
though,
less obscure than Star Wars.
Is it?
Yeah.
No, I don't know it. But look, I'm happy to go with it.
Fine.
Yeah, as long as I come off looking well. The Beavis to my Butthead.
Nice.
Yeah, that makes me Butthead. Yeah. I've been kind of keep thinking of us as like Halloween characters or like costumes. So that's why I keep thinking like that, that we could potentially dress up as these people next year. That's the way I look at our relationship.
Yeah, we've threatened to do it a few times. And
Gareth to my Wayne.
Yeah, we went as far as the wig and then pre-record and then decided,
I was also watching Step Brothers last night. And I think we could put in some bunk beds in here. How fast would that be?
Yeah, so much space for activities.
Yeah, we'd have to ask Pat. Pat?
Yeah.
We can put it, okay. Yes.
So we don't need permission from Pat. We'll do what we want.
It's our house, but we can, yeah? Class.
So
say it to yes. Thank you, Pat. Okay, welcome to the show. A lot of rugby to talk about this week. Big action-packed weekend in the Guinness Pro 14. We're going to be looking back at Munster's very impressive victory in Cork against Edinburgh on Friday night. We're going to be looking at the Leinster. Well, it's a huge weekend in general for the Irish provinces. We'll look at the Leinster, Ulster and Connacht match. We've got Keith Earls on the show to talk about his 8-minute hat-trick on Friday night. We've got Sene Nuopu, who's going to come on and talk to us about her experience captaining the Irish team. And we're going to look ahead at this weekend's Champions Cup. But I suppose, first of all, I'd like to take a moment to look at Chris Farrell and his massive impact coming back into the Munster team.
The turnovers at the Scarlets, and it was what they did with that turnover ball. I mean, they scored a huge amount of tries off his turnovers in play. Now it's clever and it's direct and it may bring another try. Farrell's going for a second of the night and he gets it.
Okay, obviously a very impressive return to play from Chris Farrell this weekend, and Munster backs in general putting on a serious show, scoring 8 tries between them. And Keith Earls, obviously the standout one. So we've got Keith on the line here to talk about his 8-minute hat-trick. Look, we can't but start with your 8-minute hat-trick on Friday night. Robbie Fowler-esque against Arsenal in 1994, who scored, I think, in 4.5 minutes. You got 8 minutes. Was that something that you were targeting once you got the second one? Were you like, I need to get a third immediately?
In 3 more minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. As I said, I was delighted to get one try because I was going through a serious drought, but it was great to get a hat-trick. It's been 10 years since my last one, back in 08 for Munster. So, look, it was a good first-half performance. I think we were delighted with that more so.
Good man. Yeah, I was on the field the day you scored that first hat-trick against the Dragons, also in Irish Independent Park. And similar to Friday night, I think the players around you probably made it easy for you to score those tries on back in the day as well, me included.
Yep.
But there was one particular try you scored that night that was, you know, quite a famous try because of a particular piece of skill, which people you basically went down the left hand side, put a little chip through, and then delicately chipped it up off the ground into his own hands without bending down, basically.
What a show off.
Oh, look. Now,
what a show, pony.
I'm all about the show button.
I know we both played quite a high level of soccer in Limerick City, but I know that you were a goalkeeper, and that was pretty poxy in my eyes. I don't think you actually meant it.
No, I played everywhere.
Did you?
That's the kind of fella I am, yeah. The field, up front, and do it all.
Okay, so you meant that, basically.
Of course I did. Okay. I've done it many times at training.
I thought you were mostly a goalkeeper. Apologies. Didn't you once play in goals for Nesson's College in hurling? And is this true that you didn't have a hurley, so you used a plank of wood?
plank of wood from woodwork. Woodwork shop was at the back of the school.
And did you puck the ball out with the plank of wood, or did you throw it, or what?
No, I didn't. There was one of the lads pegging on. Yeah, from the parachute, he hit some puck out. Now, bear in mind, we played on a rugby field as well, so he was scoring points from a puck out. So I didn't really have much to do. Just stand there with a plank of wood, probably look intimidating.
I'm sure you did. You're very good at that. But back to Friday night. I did hear an interview with Andrew Conway before the game where he said that he's changing his approach to playing on the wing, and he's focusing back on scoring as many tries as he possibly can. Like, basically he said that wing forwards poach balls and wingers score tries, and that's where my focus is for the future, which I thought was a very cool thing to hear from a Munster back, and the intent there. Is that something that you've got going on as a back line, considering you got 8 tries between you on Friday night?
Yeah, look, I completely understand where he's coming from, because I suppose a couple of years ago I went the complete opposite. You know, I kind of tried to work on my defence. I worked on my defence so much I probably left my own game behind me, which was just getting ball in hand and having a go rather than just playing it safe every time, just trying to be a defensive player. I suppose I got criticised quite a bit when I was younger for defensive stuff, so that's something I worked really hard on. And now the last couple of years I've been the same as Andrew. Look, I said Joe has changed the game for everyone, and Finby knows that his wingers were hitting rucks now and were counter rucking, and you barely have any energy left in you to attack, you know. So it's just was finding the balance of just doing what's right for the team and getting your own few tries or a couple of touches on the ball as well.
Rosie, we were always the fall guy, weren't we? It was either your fault or it was my fault.
Yeah, 100%. We had to clean up everything.
Yeah, yeah.
We were getting blamed for the scrums one stage as well, I think.
I say I probably still got blamed after retiring and all. Still, are you getting better at kind of, you know, someone as naive and wet behind the ears as Jacob? You're kind of.
He takes a lot of the brunt.
Yeah,
which is great. But it's about finding the balance, and you know, I think everyone's work rate has gone through the roof now, and we're kind of leaving no stone unturned with, you know, whether it's covering chip throughs or covering each other's backs, like, you know. And you know yourself, it's full on for 80 minutes, but you know, it's well worth it at the end of the day if you get a good result.
Yeah, I'm always interested to hear, having never worked under Joe Schmidt myself, it sounds, you know, we're all gutted to see him go, and you know, so grateful for what he's given to Irish rugby, but it must be very, very taxing to work in that environment physically. When I hear the training sessions you do and even what is expected of you, as you say, as a back in a game, that you're barely any airlift in your lungs to do what a winger should do. But yeah, how have you found that adjustment to that physical exertion, the training and in games?
I'm trying to get me in trouble, Leo.
No, I'm just saying.
No, it's been looking fair.
Being honest.
Extremely nice as well. You know, we don't do much contact. You know, we just try and be sharp mentally, and you know, we're kind of try and work under fatigue. And make a game situation, you know. So, I suppose I've Joe to thank as well for bringing my game to a new level, or having, you know, having a good balance between defence and attack. And I suppose he gets the most out of us, you know. And I say that can frustrate teams at times, knowing that, you know, I think we don't go away.
Earlsy, for a while there, I don't know if you're still doing it. For a while, you weren't lifting any weights in the gym, and that might have been the point where you're obviously always fairly athletic and dynamic, but you look more powerful and more dynamic and more physical than ever. And you're getting on a bit, Earlsy. So it's remarkable how sharp you look. Is that still the same routine in the gym, by the way?
Yeah, same routine. I suppose I'm trying to, like between back issues and knee issues and stuff like that, it was quite hard to lift heavy weights, and I just didn't like feel blown up after doing weights. And look, I try and do kind of rehab kind of weights now. It's kind of, so you do need to put on a small bit of muscle, like, you know, if I'm feeling good, I might do a small bit. But yeah, I suppose I have a lot in the bank as well from 10 years previously as well. It's just I've learned from Paulie and a few of the lads that, as you said, I'm pushing on somewhat now. That feeling good and looking after body is more important than trying to be big or good in the gym.
Man. And just going back to the Guinness series and that victory over the All Blacks, how did it feel for you, having beaten them on Irish soil and in front of a home crowd in the Aviva?
Yeah, it was great. It was, it was a massive box ticker for me. I suppose I've missed out in Chicago through suspension, and the last time I played against New Zealand, it was a 16-0 and a 4-0 off Jose Gare into the face. So it was good. We got a win.
Yeah, absolutely. Massive box ticked. I'm very jealous of the pair of you anyway to having done that. And then a great weekend for Munster on Friday night. And how are you gearing up towards next weekend?
Yeah, it was good. I think it was important last week, you know, that, you know, we couldn't ease our way into it. I know the second half was a bit of a struggle, but, you know, it's important to get some momentum going into the next 2 weeks. Cast at home on Sunday, who are top 14 champions, and, you know, it's going to be a massive challenge. The pool is wide open as well, you know. So, look, we love Europe in Thomond Park, so hopefully it'll be another great day.
Yeah, very much looking forward to it. Okay, sure. Look, Keith, that's great, man. Thanks a million for coming in to Andrew and Barry's House of Rugby. Just to finish off with, we put out a poll last night for the Guinness Maid of Moore Player of the Weekend. You were up against the likes of Tom Farrell, John Cooney, Jimmy O'Brien, and you came out on top. So look, to go with your huge growing awards cabinet, you've won the prestigious Basil Andrews Guinness Maid of Moore Player of the Weekend. So
we've highlighted my player.
I think we're going to give out pillows. We've got little pillows on our couch, so we're going to start giving them out. So
apart from that, it's more of a well done. Just keep up the good work. Nothing material. Good man. We're very proud of you.
Thanks a million.
All right. Well, look, man, best of luck next weekend, and thanks for taking the time to chat to us.
Cheers, Ed.
See you, man. So that was Keith Earls talking about his experience Friday night, his 8-minute hat trick, and it was a good game. Did you see the Munster match Friday night?
I saw bits of it. Yeah, some big performances.
Yeah.
It's looking pretty ominous for anybody who plays against Munster at the minute, because they're getting a lot of momentum. Farrell's back, Blendall's back, Earlsy's playing really well, Murray's back. Mm-hmm. I think they're going unbelievably well at the minute. That's a decent Edinburgh outfit as well. They started the season really well, and they've been a little bit up and down, but they are capable of big performances, and they just got outclassed, I think, didn't they?
Yeah, they're a soft enough team out, like, but I think Munster, just as you said, they're on a roll at the moment. They're just scoring tries for fun. I did think Chris Farrell was a massive bonus to get him back on the pitch. He's like the Sonny Bill Williams of the Irish rugby scene at the moment. His ability to move at that pace, even though he's 18 stone, his offloading, his lines of running, he created two brilliant tries, scored two brilliant tries. And he's just a weapon that Munster haven't had in a long time.
Yeah, first game back as well.
Yeah, incredible.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Very impressive getting straight back.
Yeah, for you know, a long time out. I think he's 8-9 months out at this point. And yeah, great to get Murray back. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. Controlled the game incredibly well in the first half. Everything he seemed to touch was gold. And even what he early pointed out there, how the second half was a little bit... they might have been disappointed with because they didn't score as many tries. But what stood out to me was their defence in the second half was unbelievable. Like there was, and I don't think anyone was pointing it out. There was a lot of criticism online saying, you know, they need to kick on a gear. But they were happy enough to let Edinburgh have the ball. And they were, like, at one point, they drove them back 40 metres off phase play, just tit for tat, just getting off the line, eating up like 10, 15 metres at a time on line speed alone. And, yeah, I just think the intent there for Munster is pretty spot on at the moment. And yeah, with the kind of attitude that I said that Conway has taken to wanting to score tries.
Yeah. I think that's an unusual thing to say, that wingers score tries and I just want to score. Because it's kind of, I think I would imagine Joe would argue that, the scoring of the tries is the outcome rather than like the traditional... The setup in Ireland with Joe and that environment is you look after the process, you do all those little contributions to your performance well, you carry well, you look after the ball, you use your footwork, you defend, you know, all that kind of stuff. But the try scoring is, I don't think Joe would have the same sort of mindset. I don't think Joe, but yeah. it's a strange one.
It really took me back. But it's
obviously where he said, I want to score more tries, and immediately goes and scores more tries.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
it's hard to knock.
That's why I think it stuck with me so much, because it was the intent, I think, that Munster have maybe lacked a little bit in the last few months, even though they're winning. It was just that kind of intent to go out and score tries and play from anywhere, which they did on Friday night. Yeah. So. Look, if that's what he needs to get him to that. I mean, Conway's such a workhorse anyway. And you saw it last week against the US as well, that, you know, he's going out with that attitude for Ireland as well. Yeah. So, look, whatever gets you riled up to play like that, then exactly. More power to
him. He's seeing Stockdale go out, scoring tries left, right and centre.
There you go. Yeah.
And probably thinks, I would like to do that. Hmm. I would like to do what he's doing.
Yeah, well, I'd happily have him on my team anyway. So anyway, yeah, we'll get to the other provinces later on. We'll be talking about Leinster and how their young players just keep showing up.
Leinster Schools had a great win on the Dragons, didn't they?
50 points on the Dragons. Yeah. Or the Michaels team, basically.
Yeah,
we'll be looking at Connacht, another huge win for them. Two week wins in a row over in South Africa. And we'll also be looking at a big win for Ulster against Cardiff. But first of all, we've got Sene Nuopu, who's come all the way up from Galway to chat to us this morning. Recently captained the Irish team against England, and we're delighted to have her on the show today.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Sene, welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness.
Thanks very much for having me.
No worries, we're delighted to have you here. I'd just like to start by saying I love hearing stories about people when they go down a certain path and when something works out for them. And I actually write a lot of songs about this kind of idea, where if a door opens for someone, if they believe it in their mind and they go with their heart and they follow something and then it works out and where that path leads them. And I, listening to your story and reading about it and how you came here supporting your husband, George, and his dream to play for Connacht, and it seemed that you were there supporting him. It was his dream. And then for, I suppose, 7 years later to work out that you captained the Irish team against England last week, I just think that is an incredible story. How did it feel for you to achieve that?
Oh, geez, thank you very much. Gosh, and you guys are doing fantastic work yourselves.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure, it was, it's been an amazing journey so far, and sure, we're still chipping away at things, and it was a massive honour to captain Ireland against England in Twickenham last week. So, in terms of that particular process, it was... you know, we've met some incredible people around the world, and especially here in Ireland, and we've come to really fall in love with Ireland and its people and culture and traditions, and you know, certainly it's something that we, you know, wanted to stay part of, and obviously George retired last year after his season with Harlequins after Connacht, and you know, we've come and moved to Dublin, and certainly, you know, just love being in Ireland, and obviously still connected with home back in New Zealand, but yeah, we just love Ireland.
Yeah, and was that ever on the cards for you when you moved here first? Did you think, well, I could, there could be a path for me to play for?
Did you quietly think it, but did not
these questions
it?
from Andrew. Growing up in New Zealand, I was always very sporty from a really young age. So, you know, I was always ever going to do something in sport. And
a bit of basketball, is that right?
Yeah, a little bit of basketball.
Done a bit of research?
I love basketball. It was my first sport. I played loads of different sports, you know, softball, cricket, loads of different activities and sports in the backyard. So when I had met George and moved overseas, I was always, you know, kept active, and I'm quite a people person, so I often want to go out and do different things and meet new people. So when we came to Ireland, my first club was Wegians, and I just went out there to meet people outside of the partner circle, and they're fantastic. Like, I love the, you know, wives and partners of the players. But certainly it was great to sort of just meet other people in sport. So Wegians was my first club team for that first 6 months in 2009. And then went to Japan, came back. Thankfully, thanks to Eric Elwood and Tim Allnutt, and Jerry Kelly was the CEO at the time for Connacht Rugby. We were on a 2-year gig in Kobe, and it worked out that we wanted to come back to Connacht and they wanted him, so it was a win-win, and an amazing time in Japan. Certainly we loved it, but really grateful to come back to Ireland in 2011. Mm-hmm. But it was then that you know, George was playing really well, and delighted for him and our family back home. And so after his second year gig, when he re-signed, that's when I knew that there was an opportunity to settle here and for me to pursue that goal of becoming an international athlete. So, certainly I probably, like you're saying, Andrew, like deep down, I had a bit of self-belief that I wasn't done. I had a, you know, unfinished business, and I grew up in a, you know, the youngest of four, and always been so active and wanting to do well, you know, and just having an amazing supportive family. So when we went overseas, it was almost, you know, a real opportunity to do something different. And I'm just really fortunate that my family and my mum, especially, single mum of four of us, I was just really lucky that she was really supportive of what I wanted to do, because traditionally it's not common for, you know, Pacific Island girls to go out and do their thing. But she's amazing, and she just sort of encourages me to do what I believe in. And certainly, you know, it's been a really humbling year, and playing touch as well. So that was my goal, to represent Ireland in three different sports. So, very fortunate.
And what way would it be then with you and George? Like, would you be chatting rugby much? Would you be like critiquing his game? He'd be critiquing your game. Because my wife said to me last night, so last week we did obviously generally kind of rugby chat, but then we threw in this Star Wars analogy that went on, and it was brilliant and we loved it. And then we were sort of saying, and my wife then said to me the other night, she goes, Andrew, listen to that last episode, and I don't really like rugby and I don't like Star Wars, so it's really not my thing. So anyway, we would never talk about rugby. And the thought of kind of sitting down, like, what's that? Would you be honest with each other? Would you be saying, listen, what you did there was not acceptable, George?
I'm terrible, and everyone knows that I'm terrible. And George and I have different personalities, which is probably why we work so well.
Yeah.
I'm brutally honest, in a nice way, though. Uh-huh. And he's brutally honest in his own way.
Uh-huh.
And I suppose, you know, part of it is to help each other be better. And
brilliant.
And just me in general, like, my passion is to get the best out of others. And that's why it was such a humbling experience to captain and to be in a position that you can, you know, impart some influence from, you know, some different experiences around the world, and with over 20 teams that I've been a part of throughout the last sort of almost 20 years, you know, over 20 years of playing rugby.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly George and I, we have a mutual respect for what we do, and our conversations are based on making each other better.
Yeah, wow.
And so, especially when George is playing, and even now, and he's teaching in Gonzaga, and he's loving it, loving coaching and things like that. So certainly the conversations in the household are rugby orientated sometimes, not all the time, but we just know when to talk about it, when not to. And then I'll know when I didn't have a good game. I'll know myself if you didn't do as well as you knew you could have. Or,
yeah, and don't bring it up then.
Yeah. So he'll look at me and then he knows not to. Yeah. Or like vice versa, and then I'll give it like, he'll give me a day and then we'll chat about it, but I'll give him like an hour or something.
Drag it out of him.
Yeah.
And when you were growing up as a teenager then, was it the Black Ferns? Was that the dream for you to represent New Zealand at senior level?
I was on a basketball sort of first, and then transferred to rugby. But certainly at the time, I was sort of focused on our provincial team, which was Otago Spirit at the time, and went to some trials and stuff for Black Ferns. So it was up there. But I wouldn't change anything for the world now. It's been one of the best experiences and highlights of my life to represent Ireland, and it's a country I feel very passionate for. And even growing up in a small town, I'm from small town Oamaru, north of Otago in New Zealand, in the South Island, and it's grown now, obviously the community is fantastic, but some friends of ours had an Irish pub in the corner. It was Annie Flanagan's at the time, and growing up, we're a very musical family, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, our family's quite musical. So we'd have instruments in the house. Yeah. For example, one of our rooms would have like drum kit and guitars and keyboard and things like that. So
and
a piano. A little bit of a piano and a guitar.
Yeah,
and George is very musical. He plays guitar and piano.
Wow.
So we jam as well in between.
Oh,
like,
really?
Brilliant.
Friends
That's
come
your
over
break from talking about rugby, jam.
Yeah, totally.
Smash.
He'll just grab, we've got a few guitars in the lounge, so he'll just grab it when he doesn't want to talk to me. He'll just plug away. So he's a big fan of The Greatest Show. I'm not sure.
So
he's been practicing all the songs on the picking of guitar.
Brilliant.
So my brother, like our family is very musical. So anyway, we grew up, the odd weekend, my brother will be jamming with his band at the Irish pub.
At the Irish pub.
So,
And, so there's always been a connection there, I suppose, for you.
I really think so. Yeah. I really do. And I remember George had... we needed 6 months to, tie us over before Japan. And I remember the agent at the time, essentially group, Simon Porter at the time, was like, his Connacht is in Galway. And I was like, is that Ireland? I was like, oh, my God. I was like, gosh, you should do it.
Yeah,
it's a joke. Like, as in, so it's funny how things work out, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think, and like from your Samoan background as well, there'd be, I suppose, a similar culture, would there, between, the Irish... We're very family orientated as well. We're very steeped in our own language. And I know you've come over here and you've thrown your hand at the Irish language as well. I've seen on Instagram and Twitter.
I'm still trying to pronounce it. I'm better writing it.
Okay.
So it's just more practice.
It's great. It's inspiring for us, like watching someone come over and immersing themselves in our culture. I wish my Gaelic was better. How's yours?
Far below average.
You guys are incredible. Like, I am so inspired by my teammates, even, and good few of the girls speak Irish. There's a couple of Irish teachers in there. Emma Considine is, in terms of that culture's already there.
So she's helping you out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The environment is just, the girls are amazing, and it's a shame, not many people get to see just how talented the girls are off the pitch as well as on the pitch. They obviously are, but certainly it's. It's just a great environment to be around, and
the dedication has always, blown my mind with the ladies rugby teams. I played with UL Bohemians for all my life, so that was where I think Irish rugby really kicked off, in my opinion anyway, back in the late 90s and 2000s. We still do have such a huge part of the international team, but it reminds me a lot of the GAA teams, where they make such commitments to travelling up and down. Like, I know you travelled from Galway to Dublin for playing with Leinster for a long time, didn't you, to train, and a lot of the Bowls players would have travelled down from Dublin Tuesday, Thursday nights and work full-time jobs and then try and get time off work to travel and play internationally. And it's mind-blowing how much commitment they have, and, you know, without ever putting their hand out or anything like that. And the standard is so high now. It's brilliant. And I think the standard is growing internationally, though, right? It's becoming yet a tough international series in November.
Absolutely. And you did right, and thanks for acknowledging that, because the girls are absolutely unbelievable. And sure, like, I'm embarrassed to even sit here. We've got, like, doctors and teachers and nurses. We've incredible talented, you know, incredibly talented girls on the team. And Kira Griffin, our captain for Ireland, is a teacher as well. And, you know, just the dedication. And as you say, the travel is something to be really, you know, motivated and inspired from. And it's funny... when I was in Galway, when you mentioned, you know, did I think I could do it? Mm-hmm. And, you know, bless George, he was very good, because I hadn't qualified for Ireland at the time. But I remember driving to Dublin from Galway like 2-3 times a week to go and train, knowing I couldn't play.
Yeah.
But now I see, until I qualified, so a couple of years.
Is the qualification
later,
the same as the men's? Is it 3 years or?
It was, yeah, 36 okay. months at the time. Yeah. And 5 years you'd need a pass for the Olympic qualification. But in terms of some of the girls doing it now, some of the younger girls, you know, it's I'm grateful that, you know, experienced that level of commitment when you didn't know there was a guarantee, you know, yeah, of getting something at the end. But certainly it stood to me when, you know, some of the younger girls who are doing fantastic and they're travelling from different areas and they get tired and they think, but, you know, had done that for a couple of years myself, it's great to just remind them that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, stay focused on what they want to achieve. If it's with Ireland,
yeah,
that's what it would take.
And so bringing through some, you know, a lot of fresh faces and new caps this autumn. Ellen Murphy, Lauren Delaney, Juliet Short, and Bevan Parsons. Is Bevan Parsons 16 years of age? Is that?
She's actually just turned 17. So it's what a fantastic opportunity for Bevan. She was absolutely outstanding in the under 18s Interpros for Connacht.
Yeah.
And certainly has, you know, been training super well with us girls and just fits in, you know, seamlessly. And it's such a great experience for her, and it's worked out well that, you know, by the time Six Nations comes up and, you know, pending the whole squad selection and things like that, you know, she'll be 17 at that stage. And it was exciting to have someone of her talent, let alone her age, in the team.
Incredible. That's probably the youngest of record, is it?
Yeah.
You heard it here first, quoting this record. Another
it's record in Irish rugby, certainly, in terms of 16, having it played.
Yeah, I've never had the likes of that.
For a senior team. But yeah, the other girls as well were fantastic. There were 6 new caps.
Yeah.
And delighted for them. And Ellen is from my club as well, Belvedere. Juliet Short is a good few of the girls, Leinster, M. Huben. Good few of those girls did super in the campaign.
So a good squad building towards the Six Nations in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. And sure, that last game against England was, you know, there were some outstanding performances, patches in that match that were, you know, some form that we needed from the girls. And the score didn't reflect the, you know, the effort and performance from us. But, you know, the only, I suppose, pleasing thing was is that at least they scored on the outside and not through us. So it was a really good, you know, foundation to build into 2019 Six Nations. Yeah.
And the Sevens going really strong as well.
Sevens have been flying it, haven't they? Certainly,
watching it.
Yeah, certainly positive steps, and you know, training together and being in that professional environment is helping the girls. And I met with Lucy Mulhall. Hopefully you get her on a show sometime soon. But she's been excellent, you know, skipper for so many years in the last few years. And we were chatting before they went away to Dubai, and they were really looking forward to it, and you know, feel like they're coming together really, really well. And I suppose in the last few years it's come together this season, so certainly would really hope that they stay on target for their Olympic qualification as well.
Yeah, certainly one eye on the Olympics
Yeah.
for Ireland. You know, our Olympic hopes are we're always optimistic, but they're few and far between often. So I think rugby could be something that we could really take a hold of in the coming Olympics, and it'd be great to see the ladies' team lead that up. We could do with the medals. Not getting ahead of
myself. No pressure.
It's amazing because I wasn't born in Ireland, but I love your humility, and at the same time, it's like just getting that self belief out of the girls is the next sort of step. Because gosh, there's some supreme athletes in Ireland, and that GAA, you know, that DNA and how athletic and just.
Is that something you've noticed? How we kind of make jokes of ourselves, or we don't get ahead of ourselves, or we're so concerned about getting slagged by the rest of the lads.
I beat you to it and slag myself.
Exactly. It's like a disclaimer slag, isn't it? But is that something you've noticed then, that Irish culture, is that because it's strange, especially with the national with the lads going so well at the minute, and just, you know, they could argue that they're the best team in the world at the minute, but certainly they would never come out with anything like that. And that humility is something that's so typical of us, isn't it?
And it's what makes it special as well. It's what makes Ireland special, and we'd be very similar as well in New Zealand and
I'm
in
just
the
realizing
island.
I'm kind of contradicting. I'm saying I'm proud of how humble we are.
But we you're the best, aren't you?
We're the world's most humble people. that doesn't really make
mind
sense.
Blown.
I've just outdone it anyway. That was the wrong argument. But that's similar to the kind of culture you're used to then.
And would be similar in terms of, you know, you'd be brought down very quickly when if you'd said something like that. But certainly what makes us special. But at the same time, in terms of that self-belief and performing for your team and your country, that's something that's a different, accessing that in a different way is quite different to that that culture of humility, which is really important. So just reminding the girls how fantastic they are, and then when they perform and express themselves, then they can be humble again.
Well, it is. It's great to have someone like you within the ranks of the Irish team and bringing that belief and that, and George, for that matter, with Gonzaga. Is it Gonzaga he's coaching? To have him with that influence in there. And I know you say you're both very different, so I presume you're the extrovert and he's the introvert. Would that be right?
Probably.
I've seen, I don't know if you know this, but I think it might be your first dance video is on YouTube.
Oh, God.
And he looks really like he's very introverted in this, especially when he's doing the worm on the ground. He's doing the worm and he's breakdancing. It's pretty funny. It's class.
I think I haven't seen that one. Have I seen it? Traditional Samoa Seva.
Was it a wedding?
So that's a... we're both Samoan, obviously. Yeah. First generation New Zealand born Samoan. So that was our Seva Samoa. That one it must have been.
Just dancing, and it's like so different to an Irish wedding, but so the same as well. It's like, I just thought it was brilliant to watch the 2E just pretty much break dancing for your first dance, and everyone around you dancing. And
so look it up.
Very cool.
We'll put a link for it.
Got some of your tries on YouTube, and then this one's like second one down, and you're dancing. So you love a dance, obviously.
And I can't wait to check out your videos too, man.
No dancing. You'll never find me dancing.
I suppose, you play sport and, you're performing for your country and your teammates and things like that, and certainly, you're actually a performer, So I don't mind the odd dance. George is actually a very good dancer. He might show his dance moves at the Wicklow Rugby Club. He coaches Wicklow as well. And teaches at Gonzaga. So certainly we're both sort of,
Do I dance?
Yeah, the odd dance.
Great. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And best of luck for the rest of the season. Best of luck for the Six Nations. And thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Well, I think Tad Furlong's been outstanding.
Yeah.
I think
Tad.
How do you say it?
We don't know how to say it up north either.
to be fair.
But we call like Tad.
We know he's like
I think it's Tig. Tig.
The D, forget about the D.
Apologies, this is really bad for me at the Irish.
Should we do it in Furlong?
We'll do it take two, and we'll actually leave one in as well. Tig.
For Tad.
But for England, I think Wilson has probably been
very good, yes.
My sort of standout for what they've done. Oh, he's had huge shoes to fill. No one really expected much of him. I think he's delivered above and beyond. I thought Carl Sinclair was very good for England as well. But yeah.
So pick one. And then Tad Wilson.
I'll go Furlong because I love the Irish.
Good. Well done, you. I think you're digging yourself out of a very deep hole. Tad Furlong for Tins.
It's only at 50 metres now. It was a mile a long time.
Okay, welcome to the Rugby Roundup. And, well, Tad Furlong. Building bridges with Mike Tindall, and he balls it up.
He did, yeah. He tried to give us a balanced explanation why he was being critical of Irish rugby, and he just ended up being more critical and more disrespectful.
Yeah.
So
that was a strange one, yeah, the Tad Furlong.
Tad.
Yeah. You didn't help him out, really, did you? How did you...
He said Tad, and I went...
I'm leaving you off, man. You're digging that hole.
Yeah, you're on your own, mate.
Yeah. Well, how did you find the show? I thought it was great. Really enjoyed it. Again, look, you and Alex have got obviously built a little bit of a rapport.
Yeah.
Which I think
he's
is
a gent, isn't he?
Isn't he? Yeah.
Alex, really great fella.
His voice is very smoothing.
Yeah, Tindall, nice fella soothing, too. I thought that culturally maybe it was slightly different to what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
By slightly different, I mean like completely, completely different. Yeah. So there were quite a lot of old school like stories about guys getting drunk and knocking each other out in bars, and it's quite a far cry from Star Wars analogies
it is
for me. I would have hated to have played in that kind of environment with a hierarchy and all the tough guys at the back of the bus just knocking all the kids out. Like, it's 2018.
The Guscott story about him not talking to anyone until they had reached a certain amount of caps or something like that.
But why don't you just talk to people that you like and find interesting?
Yeah.
And then, you know, regardless of how many caps they have.
Yeah.
Why don't you just, you know, like them for who they are? Call me old-fashioned, but...
It didn't really happen. There was obviously you had to earn certain players' respect and stuff like that, didn't you? When we first started out, and I think it came from even schools or underage club rugby. If you were going up to a team above you or anything, that if you were a younger player, it was always... Like you said, I think on the show you made a good point where certain players just know that mm-hmm. when they come in and they're young, they keep quiet for a while and... Certain players probably should keep quiet and they don't.
Yeah.
So there is that balance that you find, but
I think a lot of kids are maybe a little bit chirpy coming in. They probably could do with a slight more of an emphasis on that type of environment, but for the kids that are shy and they know that let's just stay quiet for a little while, then that kind of environment will just make that more difficult for them to kind of find their feet and be themselves. And ultimately, is that not the sort of environment you want to create in a rugby team? Just kind of mates and everybody's on the same level together. Everybody works as hard for each other. I don't know. Yeah. That's the way I see it anyway.
We had a brilliant one. It was a day out we had, let's call it. A squad day out where we went out and had the crack. And we were on a bus. And there was about 40 of us on it, the whole from the like development up to the senior players, and we went out in a bus and we were stopped off for a drink halfway, and when we went to leave an hour later, all the young players had safety belted themselves into the back row of the bus, which was where all the hard old school boys usually sit. So it was like Sir Conor Murray, Peter Manny, Earl Z, Dave Foley, Tommy O'Donnell, Mike Sherry, and it was brilliant. So they put on their safety belts and they had megaphones and they had signs like as if they were a union, and it was like, hell no, we won't go. And they were trying to change the, you know, out with the old, in with the new. And the bus started and we just took off driving, and it was a little bit awkward to kind of get them out. And Paulie was the captain at the time, and he was like, Asher, look, give them their moment. So we all just kind of sat down, and then they started getting ahead of themselves and started kind of singing songs and how they're all getting so old and all this kind of stuff. And I remember being at the front of the bus, and we were just laughing at them. And Dougie, who's, you know, the nicest guy in the world, probably just such a gentleman, but you don't cross him. Like, he turned to Paulie and he said, wouldn't happen on my watch, mate.
We challenged him.
Yeah, he's like, you know, it's like you come home and there's some guy sitting on your couch, drinking your beer, watching your telly, chatting up your missus. It's the same thing. And I was like,
not that similar.
Not really. Yeah. I like where you're going with this. Yeah. And you could just see the red mist descending over Paulie's eyes.
Is this Paulie pre-kids or post-kids?
This is probably 2009, I'd say. So how old is...
Because he said, I think that the red mist wouldn't have happened as quickly post kids.
Okay. Oh no, it happened.
That was my impression.
Instantly.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And he just gathered like Tony Buckley, Mushy, and Mick O'Driscoll, and John Hayes.
Forget it. Just bring Mushy.
Just bring Mushy. Yeah. The enforcer.
Yeah.
There's a wrestler if you want one. And he just went back, and let's just say they moved. Yeah. Actually, before that, Paulie turned. He goes, right. And he turned away, and then he turned back to me, and he took his front teeth out, and he handed me his teeth. And he was like, hold on to them a second, kid. And then they went back, and yeah, they moved them, let's say.
So that was your big part to play, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Your big tough guy holding O'Connell's teeth.
Yeah, someone had to do it, right?
Yeah. You were like mates with
serpent,
the yeah,
serpent.
You were mates with the cool kids. Yeah. You're that annoying little fella that hangs out with the hard guys in school. If you're going to get into a fight, I'll hold your teeth for you.
Oh, the story is massively backfired. I actually put them in my mouth. Oh, I've got Paul O'Connell's teeth in. Anyway. Oh, sorry. So, suppose we get back to some rugby.
Yeah, where were we?
Yeah.
Let's get this finished off. Get out for breakfast.
Some love for Connacht, I think, is very much needed after their two big wins over in South Africa this week. Did you catch the game on Sunday? It was Saturday?
I saw bits of it.
Yeah, saw the highlights last night.
Yeah, obviously, Cheetahs is... Southern Kings, typically everybody goes to Southern Kings and wins, but Cheetahs is a decent win. Not quite as good as they were last season, but still gone up there and playing a decent bit of rugby, scoring a few tries. I thought they looked fairly sharp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're in a good position at the moment, and it's great. You know, all the provinces, you know, sitting quite comfortably. It's just, again, highlights how strong the Irish rugby scene is at the moment and the style that we're playing. Leinster on Saturday, I went out and absolutely hockey the Dragons.
It's not fair. Those kids, they don't know they're living.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've been beat at Rodney Parade.
Really, yeah.
It's
really, yeah, you said honest. That before, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, they just go over there like it's nothing.
Yeah. Again, when we talk about like players having to earn respect and coming out of school and having to, you know, the hierarchy and stuff, but these guys are coming out of school at 18, 19 years of age and it seems that they're just seamlessly moving into position, and it doesn't matter who's on the field for Leinster at the moment, they're still go through the exact same processes and can still put the same patterns of play together and just take apart any team.
Yeah, they're a product of their environment, aren't they? They've got like Frawley, Kieran Frawley's just looking up to Ross Byrne and Johnny Sexton, and he's saying, okay, well, that's the way I'm going, so that's the guy who I'm looking up to, I'm trying to emulate that, and they're probably following the footsteps of them. Your man Hugo Keenan's probably just looking at Carney and saying, right, well, that's what I'm going to be like, and they just slot into that environment. It's really, really impressive, and it doesn't bode well for the other provinces.
There's
so much potential, as well as like obviously being probably the best team in Europe. They're top tier, and even when they go down, they get two or three injuries, young guys coming in, no problem. They're coping with it really well, so it's ominous for every other club around, I think.
And Scott Penny again getting on the score sheet, looks like just a natural seven who's been playing at this level for years. He's doing all the right things. He said Ross Byrne, I thought his kicking game was incredible. I think he had two kicks for tries anyway, and he, another few really important kicks for position. O'Brien, the two O'Briens in the centre, Dave O'Brien, 12. I just think he's exceptional at the moment, and he's a different type of player to Henshaw and to Ringrose. So it's not like they're turning out the same player or the same habits. They're different types of players, and then the front row, they just keep bringing on, like there's burn after burn at this stage. It's just Dave Byrne, they're built so well. They're built, it's like they come out of school just built to be an international prop. It's incredible. And then you've got guys like Scott Fardy, who was man of the match, and an experienced guy like that leading the way. But you were working for the Ulster game, were you?
I was, yeah. Ulster got the job done. It was fairly physical. It was a little bit greasy, so it was quite direct. A lot of big hits, a lot of big collisions, a lot of kicking, actually. A lot of high ball reception, a lot of box kicks, that kind of stuff. Cardiff, actually, I thought did really well for long periods, and then Ulster just got purple patch in the second half and kind of upped the ante a little bit, scored a couple of penalties when they had a man in the bin. They just got the job done. I picked Cooney as man of the match, and then I was chatting to a couple of supporters afterwards, and they were like, "Who on earth picked Cooney?" And I wanted to deny it, but I came clean. I actually thought he went really well, and because there was so much kicking, his kicking was brilliant. And
he would have been my goalie, controlled the game.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I suppose they were probably thinking the maul and the scrum were fairly dominant for Ulster, and they won the game for them. So they were probably thinking, "You have to give it to a forward, really." Hmm. But although the forwards played well, there was no one standout for me. Cooney, I thought, was just back to the way he's been for Ulster, and he's struggling with a shoulder injury as well at the minute. So yeah, he's gone really well, and then he did his 30-second long handshake after the game.
Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. It was like, I think you pointed out on Twitter, it was like bonsai.
Yeah, bonsai!
That should be his thing now, he should just do that. Yeah. Every time he's win his man a match, keep shaking hands. But I think you're right, I thought it was a tough, tough game. Cardiff are a solid team, and they've been going really well, and they looked very dangerous. Ulster had to manage them for the first half, and did very well, and got away with a great try. Was it Turnbull to score the try? Was it? I think they, you know, Dan McFarlane making some good selection decisions as well, having Stockdale off the bench, Rory Best.
The two of them came off the bench. Rory got a turnover, and then Jacob got a turnover right at the end.
Yeah,
effectively kind of closed the game out. Johnny McPhillips came on, and he's a guy I don't think he's got as much joy as he could have. I think he's a really good player.
Yeah.
Billy Byrne's gone great, I must say. Now, just Johnny last year, I thought he was one of the guys, because Ulster had such a tough season last year, he was one of the ones kind of digging in and getting the job done, and he was one of the reasons why Ulster finished the season so strongly last year. So it'd be nice to see him get a couple of opportunities. He's a talented boy.
Yeah, I thought he closed out the game really well with a few big kicks. So looking ahead to the Champions Cup this weekend, Ulster way to Scarlets. Are you working for that? You
I am, yeah. That is the Scarlets last, or weekend before last as well, and it's miserable over there. That was where I played my last professional game. That finished me off, and I was sitting there in the stand freezing cold going, "Oh, I forgot how much I hated this place." So, and
you got to go back.
Yeah, I got to go back. So Scarlets and Ulster, it's as much of a banker for the home team as any other game, really. I think Ulster never went over there, and Scarlets hardly ever win in Belfast. So fingers crossed.
Old Irish attitude again, man.
Exactly, yeah. The humility, defeatist humility.
So you think it's going to be a Scarlets win, a home
it's
win?
It's tough. It's very, very tough.
Tough place to go.
I think it became a bit of an arm wrestle, unusual for Scarlets to kind of be as direct and physical as they were that weekend. I think they'd maybe got a bit of a hard time in training, having just got bullied a little bit by Edinburgh, so they kind of bounced back and kind of proved the point with their physicality. So strangely, if it was dry, Ulster could play a little bit more, but obviously that's gonna that's gonna benefit Scarlets as well. So we'll see.
Yeah.
What happens.
Yeah, and then Leinster, tough one over in the Rec this weekend. Is going to be a huge game for them. I think that they're going so well that we presume that they're coasting, I suppose. But the game, the loss to Toulouse over there, will just kind of changes the goalposts a little bit. That they really have to. I don't think it's going to upset the way they play or anything like that, but they really need a win this weekend.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they didn't get 5 points. Yeah, to be honest. You know,
even with the amount of players they have to come back, having been rested this last weekend, it's going to be hard to see them not win. Munster at home to Casts on Sunday afternoon, again with their tails up, Munster at the moment, and with the likes of John Klein and CJ to come back in. And I think they've got a few selection decisions to make there that might be a bit tough, but Casts, they're not going to be no easy feat, but French teams travelling to Tone Park, history would tell us
that
should have it.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Let's go with that. Alright, later this week we'll be releasing a bonus episode featuring Ireland's try scoring hero against the All Blacks, Jacob Stockdale. Trimby, you were back at the old stomping ground in Belfast, Kingsbank Stadium, Raven Hill, and you caught up with young Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of crack.
Yep.
Cool. Here's a little taster.
They rule the roost, them boys.
Yeah.
They call the shots.
Yeah. Pete, I'd say Pete, Bessie and Johnny are your three.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Top of the...
Yeah, untouchables.
Top of the pile, like, yeah.
Untouchables. Yeah. Who's the untouchables at Ulster?
Probably myself. Yeah, well, obviously, Bestie, like, I mean...
There's only one untouchable, isn't there?
Yeah, realistically, yeah, he's had that top change room spot for...
Yeah.
Like, he literally created a system in the change room so that he'd stay...
I know!
He'd stay in his change room spot.
I had more Ulster appearances than him.
He was like, how can we... Right, we'll make Ireland caps worth three.
Yeah.
So nobody can get anywhere near me.
He created a formula.
Yeah, he created a formula where his score was like 800 and everybody else is like 90.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he had an absolute blinder, didn't he? He just wanted to be in the number one spot.
Yeah. And he was like, we'll make Lion caps worth five just to be safe as well. Like,
yeah. The system worked well for you, actually. You've shot up.
Yeah, I'm like top 10 at the moment. Like, yeah. I'm like that back wall.
Because
like,
we keep retiring. Me, Tommy, Chad. Chad got halfway through the system and just went, stop this, I'm out of here.
Okay, cool. That'll be with you later in the week. So don't forget to subscribe on whatever platform you listen to this. Or, of course, anyone that follows us on YouTube, check out our videos there. Okay, next up it's hashtag AskHOR. We put out a shout for Twitter questions using the hashtag AskHOR last night, and here are some of your best questions. Keith Cahill, with Jameson Gibson-Park becoming Irish qualified at the start of 2019-2020 season, where does he rank among Irish scrum halves, and could he be a bolter for the World Cup? I didn't know he was going to be Irish qualified. That's great.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to know where he is. Him and Luke are kind of in and out a little bit, and it's hard to know a true reflection of kind of who's first choice because of that weird rule.
Yeah.
So if he does manage to get first choice ahead of Luke routinely, then he's right up there. He's obviously with Marmion injured at the minute. He's not going to be injured all the way through to next summer, but. He could easily become second choice behind Murray.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's a lot of rugby to be played between now and then.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it would be hard to jump him up there unless he gets a chance if McGrath, touchwood, doesn't get injured. But if he did, then Gibson-Park will get the opportunity with Leinster. I think that's where it will come first. I'm a big fan of his. Again, we saw at the weekend, he has this ability to zip a big pass in the opposition 22 to a wing to score. He did it a few times for James Lowe against Munster earlier in the season. Did it for Fardy on Saturday, and also did it for, I think, Kearney as well on the wing. He's got a serious eye for that. He's a bit of a baller as well.
Yeah.
He's got a nice kicking skills and physical guy, but again, just shows you the depth we have at the moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think so, Keith. Could be within the running. Sean McGowan asks, would older generations, e.g. Rodge, Bod, Strings, Darce, etc., have even got a sniff if they were starting out now? He didn't give much chance there, did he? Even got a sniff.
I think that makes it very clear what he thinks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway,
I think they would have got a sniff, Sean.
Yeah, I think that's pretty, I don't know, that's pretty outrageous to say that some of the best players we've ever had wouldn't get a sniff at the moment. Your rugby's funny like that, how it's a different game, so it can move on.
You can't compare, though.
Yeah.
Although Stringer's only just finished last year, didn't he?
I was actually calling early in the season when Munster had a little bit of a scrum half problem. I was saying, why don't we just bring back Stringer?
Yeah, but he's let himself go. He's in shocking he's in shocking shape at the minute.
Yeah, he just needs to work on his fitness, but I'm sure his pass is still there. But look, I think what those lads achieved, especially Raj with Munster, and you know, having come from, you know, Munster playing to a few hundred people over in France or a few hundred people in Thomond Park to winning two Heineken Cups and going on to win.
They wouldn't have had a sniff.
They wouldn't have had a sniff. Trico being one of the best players in the world, etc. Yeah, I think...
not to discourage any more questions.
Yeah. Yes.
No.
But yeah.
Keep
anyway,
that is better than last week's question, which was who is Baz?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we cleared that up, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks God. Yeah, but we're very open to the most random questions you want. So keep them coming. Mm-hmm. I think you had one more there.
Yeah, there was one from David Lam, and he asked in a Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. I think he was drawing on the WWF reference from last week with the Phenom,
Undertaker.
The Undertaker, mm-hmm. and Paul Bearer.
Al Gore.
Al Gore. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he said in a Royal Rumble, he draws on a few. I think he's complaining that there's not enough nicknames nowadays. And so he said in a Royal Rumble, who would win? Bambi. That's you.
I think Bambi's me. David mm-hmm. Wallace used to call me Bambi because I had skinny legs.
Uh-huh, easy. Yeah. The Junkyard Dog, which is Tyndall, very on point.
Yeah,
apparently that's Tyndall.
Yeah, a dog.
Always Moore.
Marty Moore.
No, Haskell. Apparently.
Okay.
Because he always lifted Moore. Apparently, that sounds like a self-proclaimed nickname.
Nickname.
Doesn't
okay.
it?
It does.
Anyway.
Terrible wrestling name.
Yeah, yeah. Mushy.
Mushy. Yeah.
Mushy Buckley. Tony.
It's like yeah.
Rob Noxious.
Very good.
Yeah.
Great wrestling name.
Yeah. Yeah. Rob Kearney, obviously. Baby Giraffe.
I feel like Rob Kearney be almost like Razor Ramon. Do you remember Razor Ramon?
Yeah.
That kind of perm little thing and maybe chewing on a little toothpick. Chico, Chico.
Bad guy?
Yeah. He was a bad guy. Yeah.
A boring, a boring bad guy.
Boring bad guy. You said it.
Baby Giraffe.
Yeah.
I think that's a reference to, I called Kieran Treadwell. Baby Giraffe. He finished an unbelievable try on Friday or Saturday there. Got an offload from McCluskey, but it hit off his knee.
I saw, that's
forward.
What I was talking about. Sorry, yeah, yeah.
And he beat all the other Cardiff defenders to the ball.
Yeah.
Went down it and then just got up again, rolled a couple of times. So
it did look like a baby giraffe.
Yeah, it looked clumsy, but it was actually unbelievably good coordination. Yeah. He finished really well. Anyway.
Again, a poor enough wrestling name, but very good comparison.
Baby Giraffe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, he's never going to make it in WWF.
No.
Felon Armitage.
Right.
So that's obviously Dylan Armitage, but it's Felon because he often gets himself in trouble.
Okay.
I thought that was quite clever.
Yeah.
Rikishi.
Rikishi. Dave Kilcoyne.
Stinkface.
Yeah, Dave Kilcoyne, Stinkface.
Is it true? Dave Kilcoyne used to eat poos.
Oh, no way. I couldn't stand beside that.
He
probably spread that himself.
No, apparently Rikishi is Tad Furlong.
Okay. Uh-huh. I could totally see him in a little red. I could see, he just looks like a wrestler.
Yeah.
Furlong, yeah.
A sumo wrestler.
Yeah.
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 And the Scaffolder, which is Liam Williams.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So yeah. I actually know this guy. David, yeah. That's why I'm able to get a little bit into what on earth he's talking about. Yeah.
Well, look, I get right behind. If anyone wants to tell us what their favourite rugby players turn wrestlers' names could be, then I'm...
Yeah. He added, actually, in a I was texting him to try and get to grips with yeah, exactly, the source of some of these, and he was able to add that two of those have kicked my head in.
As in your head in?
Yeah, my head in.
Who were they?
The Scaffolder and Felon Armitage have both battered me on the pitch.
I punched you?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I remember the Scaffolder did.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll tell you more about that next tune week. In. Subscribe and tune in.
Next week.
Yeah. Previously on Baz and Andrew.
Oh, that's great. Uh-huh. That's great. All right. Well, keep those questions coming. And I've also had a few requests over the last few weeks. People coming to gigs and asking me, can they give shout outs? So I'm all about requests. I will say pretty much anything. So anyone that wants to give us requests or questions, more random, the better. One was for a man that I met on Saturday night who's playing for Kilfeacle this weekend in the Challenge Cup against Bandon in the semi-final. His name was Chichi or Chachi, I believe. I think he could be the Colombian drug dealer of Kilfeacle or something like that. So big shout out to Kilfeacle. Best of luck at the weekend. And right, everybody else, thanks for your comments, questions, and for listening and for watching us on YouTube. If you're enjoying the show, please do remember to subscribe and leave us a rating or a comment. A big, big thank you to everyone that was involved in making the show this week, to all our guests. We've had a great day. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Thanks for keeping us company.
Party on, Baz.
Party on, Andrew.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.